Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by Managers.
This is Dumpty Dum, a show about reality doggy drama that is centered on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands on the burgeoning relationship that is Royfield Brown. And with me, I have the Lumina Fair, who is...
Kerry Warbis.
And we are joined by that grubby little fling who goes by the name of...
Peter Fickling.
And the last part of this week's dalliance, folks, is you. Well, potential dalliance, you never know. I think that's where it's going. Anyway, this week's Dumpty Dum is from Jenny from Southampton. Boy, oh boy, what an accomplished whistler she is.
What's the female version of Roger? Because that's like Roger Whittaker.
Mm.
That was absolutely sensational.
It was utterly brilliant. And she even like, she kind of jazzed it up a little at the end. She
yeah.
wasn't, you know, she wasn't like, you know, standing by the normal kind of like notes there. She, you know, she's totally impressive, Jenny.
Yep, there was a right flourish at the end. It was beautiful.
Yeah. Ooh. Kerry. I'm guessing she's scared off any potential whistler for a dum-de-dum. But if somebody else wanted to, maybe, I don't know, hum one, sing one, play one on the kazoo, knock one out on a banjo, anything but whistle, how can that be done?
Well, if you would like to sing us a dum-de-dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105. Leave us a message on SpeakPipe or send a text message starting with DUM to 077-862-00690. Thanks to our new-ish social media supremos, Cosmo for his podcast roundups, Mike Hatton for his character counts, Shambridge for her voices, and to Lucy B. Freeman.
A little bit of housekeeping. Some of you probably know that we didn't actually do the live show yesterday here at King's Place, and I took the decision about a week ago to pull out of doing being part of the London Podcast Festival. So sorry if you have bought a ticket, but you would have received an email from King's Place saying that you can get a full refund. So I hope that didn't mess you up too much, but with everything going on and with the fact that the country seems to be slipping back into a little bit of a lockdown situation, I thought it only right and proper, considering that people had to travel near and far, and also the fact that we were actually selling more online tickets than actual physical ones, really just to call a halt to it. So again, if you did buy a ticket, you can get a full refund. So sorry, hope you understand. But what I am going to do, and I have floated this out on the Facebook and on the Flick app, is to do a Friday Zoom in a couple of weeks' time. We can all just join up 7 o'clock on a Friday, have a cocktail in front of us, natter about the Archers. Sunny said that she'd be up for it. I don't know about these pair. They have to speak to their managers, I think, and see what their availability is. We'll give that a couple of weeks, and we'll have a little bit of fun all together online. On this week's episode, we hear views from Caroline Wright. Now, it's a bit of a poem type thing, which we're going to put at the end of the show. So listen all the way to the end for Carolyn's little missive. Jackie, we've got the Cranky Yankee. She's back with a spoon. Woo! Some more deep psychological insights into the world of Ambridge from the Upper Lower East West Side. Mary Not Contrary, she's returned as well.
Yay!
And Ali, So we've got a bumper show, folks, in terms of goings-on. But first, let's have a little bit of this, because you know what it is, it's Hot Topic time. Right, it's our burning issue of the week. And this week it's Folks We Miss and Why. Because off mic, Pete opined that there's been a lot of doom and gloom in and around Danbridge this week. And it's all going to be deep, heavy stuff on the caller in us. So let's keep it light and frothy. Kerry Warburton, my favourite auntie. Why don't you kick things off?
Okay, well, the people that I'm missing and that I would love to reappear ASAP are the Lower Loxley bunch. I would like to hear how they're all getting on. Lizzie, Russ, Lily, Fweddy. Has Russ made a move on Lizzie yet? Are they now in a relationship? Which kitchen items has Russ bought online? I'm thinking probably a digital gooseneck tea kettle or a vertical waffle maker, perhaps.
Oh, that makes me feel bad. I have just bought a gooseneck kettle.
Have you? Oh, that's hilarious. Do you have a vertical waffle maker?
I don't, but last week I said I was like Russ and you poo-pooed me, but I was right. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Jesus, that is scary, yeah. Or maybe a precision poacher, I thought, perhaps. Also, what income are they getting at Lower Loxley at the moment?
That's a great point.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that at all.
Mm. If you're running an art gallery no one goes to, do you actually need to engage in furloughing or social distancing? That's the question.
Yeah, I mean, no one went to it before lockdown, probably.
Yeah. But...
So, yeah. to be fair, there are other strings to that business's bow than just the art gallery, to be fair.
Yeah, there are. But, you know, during lockdown and then being confined when it was proper lockdown, do you reckon Russ and Lizzie will have been drawn more together?
I think their relationship might endure. I was always expecting it to implode, but then Lily kept on sort of finding ways of loving him more, which, you know, I found confusing, but it did seem to be progressing quite nicely. And he's incredibly obnoxious, but, you know, to your point about wanting them all back in the arches, Kerry, he's very, very good at making things exciting or creating an engaging scene. It was a bit like Rob. Even though your blood's boiling, the effect he has on the show is sort of, you know, is transformative.
Yeah. But do you not think he will have tried to cop off with Lizzie, though?
Lizzie's, you know, on Tinder full time, isn't she now? Flicking left and right like a maniac. She's probably sort of, you know, not social distancing all over Borsetshire.
Oh, well, you see, I want to find out. How about you? Who have you been missing?
Toby. I've always had a soft spot for Toby, and from a sort of self-indulgent and selfish point of view, I think the fact that he's a new father to a similarly aged child, and I always felt he was given a bit of a hard time by Pip and family. You know, it was everything he did was, you know, it was never good enough. He was expected to be a sort of full-time dad, but then not allowed to actually be that close. I did think he was obviously being a bit cheeky trying to move into the house, but, you know, it was kind of like, we want you here all the time, but then, but not, you know, but not when it's, you know, inconvenient to us.
Yeah.
And I also think that all of his sins are fairly minor ones. They're the sins of a young man. They're not kind of like, you know, deep flaws. It's not your Philip Moss or sort of level of flaws. And so, you know, being a bit of a silly bugger, having sex with Kate in the swimming pool, being unreliable, being a terrible businessman. But again, like Russ, or, you know, when is Toby anything but lighting up a scene?
Yeah, the only problem with Toby returning is that Pip might have to appear as well. So I might have to poo-poo that.
Through, have I? But you could make the same argument about Freddie, Lily and Russ. Russ comes along as part of the baggage.
Yeah. You
know, and to some extent, Lizzie. Lizzie can be quite annoying when she's in one of her pompous moods.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I am missing that at the moment.
Yeah. I have on my piece of paper, I don't have notes. I literally just have it says Frilly at the top for Freddie and Lily and then Toby underneath. That's all my notes. Oh, actually, no. I did go a bit Bruno Tonelli and it says with Toby, it says sexy, sassy, silly. I don't know why I wrote that, but which is true. I think he is all of those things. But then for Frilly, I'd written tender relationship for Freddie and Lily. That was something I really enjoyed with them, was just how much they looked after each other. It seemed very I mean, I've never had a twin, but yeah. it seemed very plausible and very sort of relatable.
Yeah, on this note as well, I still don't know when they're going to return to the full-on Monday to Friday plus Sunday episodes. I did ask on Twitter and no one knows. So,
well, we know that they've gone back into the studio, but I don't know if you saw the photo, but there was a photo and it was the actor who plays Fallon, and I forget who the other two were. Elizabeth, the actor who plays Elizabeth, was also there.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And they were all, you know, at least 10 foot away from each other in a line. So I'm presuming that they're still getting the production flow behind the fact that certain characters aren't traveling, i.e. your Peggy's, because you know they're old and there's the pandemic. Then there is the reduced capacity of the amount of actors, etc. But this is just pure speculation from my part, just kind of guessing from that picture. So we know they're back, but they're still not, in inverted commas, back.
Yeah.
Rather serendipitously, they've actually had quite a lot of plots with the older characters over the last half a year. There were, you know, Peggy's been heavily involved. Jill has had a long plot line. So they don't necessarily have to rush those older actors back in. They could drift away for a little while. I mean, obviously, it could be difficult to get Kate back in because obviously she lives with Peggy. But
yeah, that's true. So Royfield, who have you been missing in the recent episodes?
Wayne Foley. I just think, seriously though, right? We've got Susan on the radio, right? And there must be loads of intra-radio tittle-tattle and gossip. And also the fact that it seems like Susan is now the big star, isn't she, of Radio Borsetshire? Mm. So Wayne Foley's nose is going to be put well out of joint.
Yeah. Is he sitting rocking in a corner bitterly somewhere?
Well, you know what? He should be, because isn't he doing the drive time now, which used to be his slot? He was the voice of the county, and now it's our Susan. So I want to hear from Wayne Foley, because, you know, he will have an axe to grind and some sour grapes to opine about. So, yeah, let's have a bit of the voice of the county back.
Yeah, please. Especially as Susan only reads out messages from her own family. He's probably very, very irked about that, probably.
If they do take Susan off the air, they reflect how, in, you know, the fact that local radio stations are shutting down, they reflect the fact that the BBC is making cutbacks. It would be great if Susan's got a taste and sort of does a podcast or something. So I don't want Susan to lose this part of her life.
I do.
Well,
yeah, podcast might be good though. Her being, you know, the gossipy person that she is could have worked well, but I don't think it has.
It might have been better if she had just done a podcast, because then it could have been more plausible that it was just a few well-meaning. That reminds me, Kerry, you went ballistic on Twitter last week, and I quite enjoyed spotting it ahead of time. And Quentin spotted it as well, the fact that Jenny and Brian had called into Susan's show.
Well, of
and
course.
Made a request.
Yeah. That would never happen, clearly. They wouldn't listen to that show, would they? And Jennifer certainly wouldn't write in about her two daughters' birthdays coming up. Actually,
absolutely.
It led to some speculation that Susan may well have made that message up entirely.
But she's now outranking Jennifer considerably. You know, in the next couple of weeks, Jennifer's going to be the strange lady in the little house with the alcoholic daughter, and, you know, the dysfunctional family bringing up her husband's illegitimate child, and Susan's the wife of a proper manager who, and also local celebrity.
Yeah, I mean, it's as famous as Madonna.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully, I think the Carters are on the up, aren't they? Emma's going to be this entrepreneur. I'm just going to keep on saying it till it happens. And
well, they're on the up until you speak to Chris.
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah, well, no, but he's a world-renowned artist now, making
making things 15-ton
wind chimes.
When he presented the bird feeder, and what did they say? It's striking.
They use negative space to describe just how awful it was.
Yeah. He admitted that he'd had to rush it towards the end as well, didn't he?
I stuck to the brief. Robert said keep it simple, so I did. And she said something like, yes, you certainly did hit the brief, Christopher.
Is it just a horseshoe stuck on a bird box?
Well, it's a wind chime, so you assume he's at least managed that.
No, there was a bird feeder and a wind. The wind chime was for Xander, wasn't it?
Oh, okay. I'm
Which is sorry. Weird as well, I think.
It's almost like I don't care about Chris and his output.
Because someone made the joke about, I hope they don't hang the wind chime over Xander's cot if it's made out of horseshoes.
I was slightly annoyed because I was holding forth about how preposterous it was to that someone would make a wind chime that, you know, weighs that much. And then we were sent links of this beautiful sort of 15-ton baritone wind chime kind of hung in the sort of hills of Alaska or something. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, there was one in a forest that Rosie Porton
Very beautiful.
Sent. That was,
exactly, yes.
It cost $3,000.
That was the downside, yes.
If Chris can make anywhere near that money, they're sorted.
you pair, I think we've somewhat gone off topic,
Sorry.
But it's been rather entertaining listening to the
Sorry,
pair of you. But it's all right. It's all right. We have a dum-de-dum news flash. And one of the beautiful things about this whole kit and caboodle, this whole podcast, is that we have a community of helpers that assist the podcast in all of its forms, whether it's the social media supremos or whether it is people that write podcast roundups. And all of us have got big love for Cosmo. He's the person with the biggest brain when it comes to things that have happened in and around Archer's Land. And he just knows everything about everything. And he does these great podcast roundups. And a little bird just told me I should have a look at this week's podcast roundup. Or last week's podcast roundup, sorry. Not only am I just incredibly touched, but it just says a lot about the wonderful country that we live in. Because basically Cosmo, as is his way, has forgone the normal constrictions of the podcast roundup format by basically just going rogue. And he's done it in a most beautiful way. And is giving thanks to Sister Katie, the Royal Surrey Hospital in Guildford, Frimley Park, his local A&E, and Dr. Leatherman, who's his cardiologist, because basically he's been incredibly ill and had to go in for an operation.
Oh, no.
And without Sister Katie spotting that there was something wrong with his tests, he's basically saying he wouldn't be here. So we have to give thanks to those professionals, those health professionals, for doing their jobs, you know, so diligently that we have Cosmo still with us to do his podcast roundup. So please, folks, go and have a read on Dum-de-Dum this week. It is incredibly touching. And as somebody who spends a lot of time in America, I say this all the time when people talk about socialized medicine and talk about this nonsense over there. And I go, you know what? Nobody goes bankrupt because they're sick or ill in the UK. And it is literally the one institution that binds the whole country together. We have something to be incredibly proud of in the NHS. We can sometimes forget that. And here is a stunning reminder. When we put out this podcast that goes all around the world, there's many people listening in America and other bits of the world which don't have the comprehensive universal healthcare coverage that we have. Mm. And here is somebody who is very dear to our hearts, who it has helped so they can still be on terra firma with their loved ones and contributing to Dum-de-Dum. So thank you, NHS. Thank you again, Sister Katie, the Royal Surrey Hospital in Guildford, Frimley Park, and Dr. Leatherman, I think I'm saying that correctly, he's cardiologist. And thank you, Cosmo, for being such a wonderful contributor to Dum-de-Dum.
Wow.
So there you go. There's a little bit of some breaking news for you, folks. And now we're going to change track and have a little bit of this.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Okay, first off, it's Ali.
Hi all, it's Ali from the swampy area that is the Washington, D.C. area in the United States. And perhaps it's that I'm teaching second graders, 7 and 8 year olds, but I find it really interesting that we're kind of getting a comparison and contrast between Alice and Emma. And one of the colorers last week mentioned that he thinks Emma might be pregnant. And I think he might be right, because think about what we have gotten out of Emma that we're seeing in Alice right now. She flirted with Gavin earlier in the year, and they've sort of got this contentious relationship of that's pretty central to the Archers, of the haves and have-nots, and just something that I think is natural being sisters-in-law. And, you know, it is going to be interesting how the potential fetal alcohol issue plays out. You know, and as an American, where we, I think, culturally view abortion a little bit differently than those of you in the UK, that's going to be, if they do take it down that road, how that's dealt with within the family is going to be interesting to this American ears. I really hope they don't do it that way. But at the same time, a fetal alcohol storyline is going to be difficult.
Well, thanks, Ali, from swampy Washington, D.C. Yeah, Alice and Emma, they are kind of, they have their similarities, don't they? Not just the fact that they each dislike the other. And if Emma is pregnant, how will that all pan out? We kind of spoke about this last week, didn't we, about whether if Emma is pregnant, could it possibly bring Alice and Emma together in some way or even further apart?
And I think we all said no. Absolutely not. Not in a million years.
Yeah.
First of all, I used to live in Washington, D.C., and a little, you know, maybe America would have a slightly more harmonious political system if they didn't put it in a baking hot, incredibly humid swamp. To Ali's point, it is unbearable there in the summer. But anyway, that's a side point. It just doesn't seem, it's just going to create jealousy, isn't it? Because no matter how much money Alice has got or prestige or status in the village, Emma's relationship with Ed is absolutely rock solid. They're such obviously good parents. You know, even just from the small amount of parenting we hear on air, it's just a truth.
Yeah. I know we can't predict these things, but do you think that Alice will go down the route of a termination? When I was re-listening again at the end of the episode where she reveals to Chris that she's pregnant, he doesn't listen to her properly at all.
Everyone got cross about that, didn't they?
Yeah, she kind of, he says, "You're okay with that?" And she starts to say, "I'm not sure."
Yeah.
And then he just goes, "Don't say that. I love you. It's all going to be fine." You think, oh, well, don't ask her if she's okay with it.
It's
pay no attention.
Do you want the heart or the head, Kerry, or both? I think my heart, I really want her to have a termination. And this is not to do with real world issues about, abortions. It's purely about with the Archers, the effect it has on the Archers. I want her to have an abortion because I can't deal with this going on and on. I don't enjoy them. I don't enjoy Alice and Chris being, at the centre of it all. So from a kind of selfish me point of view, I just want it all done and dusted. And I think that'll actually go on longer. I can tolerate another child in the village more than I can tolerate the plot line about an abortion. But I think I think if I'm sort of trying to analyze it, I think it would be a better for the Archers, better for the listeners in terms of public broadcasting, if they did do a plot line about abortion and had Chris and Alice wrestling with that decision and all of the moral implications, both in terms of the effect on the family, but also the effect on Alice as a mother and a mother's right to make that choice or not rights, lack of rights, depending on your perspective.
Yeah, she clearly feels she's not ready. She said that to Gavin. She's kind of hinted at that to the woman from the clinic who she was having phone conversations with.
And she drew. She didn't say it directly to Gavin, but she hinted very broadly that it's to do with the alcohol. She's aware of that, which sort of, I mean, without wanting to go back into the whole denial thing, it does show that she is obviously aware of the levels of drinking. She's not, she's, even if it's retrospectively, she now understands through the pregnancy that this has had an impact on her and therefore her baby's health.
Yeah, I can't recall. I think it might have been to the clinic woman.
Yes, it was, yeah.
Where she said, if to be ready, I would have, you know, stopped having caffeine.
Taken vitamins,
I would have taken
vitamins.
Yeah. And then she did say something like, "and all the rest." That was the closest she got to alluding to the alcohol, wasn't it?
I don't know if it's in America or here, but I think there is a brand of beer that now does vitamins in your beer. So maybe we could, maybe that's something Alice could look at. Yeah.
The other thing to say about Chris not listening to her is he's wanted a child for at least 2 years now. So him hearing that she's pregnant, of course, he's just emotionally just going to go, "Oh my gosh, this is great news." And remember last week and that telephone call when he was trying to find Alice, he said, "You say that I don't pay attention to things." So here is somebody who's been asking his wife, "Let's start a family." Hears that she's pregnant. You know, all he hears is that they're going to have a baby. He doesn't hear that she's pregnant. He's heard, "We're going to have a baby." And it's kind of understandable viewed from that lens.
Do you think, Royfield, if you've got married to someone and if you've got married to someone, typically it's understood that you're going to be trying for a family. I mean, I think it's
that's
forgivable.
The implication. Yeah.
It's forgivable that Chris's reaction immediately was overwhelmingly positive, and he's like, "Oh, you're amazing, and this is such great news." If he continues to, if it turns into him pressuring her, then that takes on a different tone. But a lot of people were suggesting that Chris was just not listening, and I think in the moment, how is he? You know, it's such big news, and from his perspective, so overwhelmingly positive. How is he supposed to separate himself from that immediately?
Exactly. We've had 2 years worth of a lead up of him saying, "Let's start a family." So he is going to react in that way, rightly or wrongly. Where I think this storyline potentially could break real ground is to show a relationship, to show a marriage, you know, the couple concerned have wildly different views about the pregnancy, and there is a termination, and then the effect that has on Chris. If they follow that through, then I think this is brilliant. You know, purely from a plot device, you know, as you said, Peter, it's nothing to do with the morality of abortion at all, but purely viewed as a fictional show or a docudrama to introduce that tension into a relationship. And if they can still be together, but to have this keep dragging through year after year and this be an undercurrent.
She hasn't said yet how far gone she is. I know we did touch upon this last week, so I'm wondering how far into the pregnancy she actually is.
I get the impression she's quite far into the pregnancy. But it's based on very little. It's just how I, you know, it's just my guesswork, but I think she's a lot more pregnant than we've been told.
I think that's how it's going to pan out.
All right. Well, Ali, stunning call. You gave us lots of pause for thought with the kind of the parallel storylines there. But now it's Upper Lower East West Side. I said it correctly this week, and it's Witherspoon.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, everyone in Dumpty Dum Towers and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. I just finished listening to last week's episode, and what a cracker it was. Well done, Auntie Carrie, Peter, and you too, Royfield. It was a pleasure to hear again from the lovely accented Maeve and from Mary Not Contrary, who was about a 9-hour drive from me. You know, Mary was the very first Dumpty Dummer I ever met in person. It was in May 2015 in Toronto, where I was for the annual meeting of the American Psychiatric Association. I believe Mary was with child at the time, and she brought her husband for backup, just in case I turned out to be a no-goody. My Dumpty Dum reputation had not yet been firmly established, having only caller-ined a few times by then. Now, on to current goings-on. First, I agree with what Glenn said last week. Although I didn't like the fact that Bert turned out to be the shoplifter, I do think there's a good story there about caring for an elderly parent who lives at home. It ain't easy. Bert isn't one of Ambridge's geriatric super people like Peggy or Jill, and he certainly won't be heading off to the Laurels for a comfy last decade or two of life. We do know that such care is almost always delivered by the daughters and not the sons. And by the way, I just checked. Who knew that Susan and Tracy had 4 wayward brothers in total? Now, let's talk about Alice. I'm not sure if she'll have an affair with Gavin, but my prediction is that she will have a termination, but won't tell Chris until afterwards. They will split up, and she'll leave the village to find herself. I think she's felt trapped by Ambridge as well as by her family, and marrying so young was a mistake. Alice needs to experience the world outside of Borchester. She will then have joined all of her siblings in having left the family for at least some significant period of time. This is not coincidental. Talk to you soon.
Ooh, Witherspoon, I love your calls. Thank you for the compliments about last week's. It was a corker, wasn't it? Even if I say so myself, we just really enjoyed it and had a lot of fun. And you've met Mary in Toronto as well. Yeah, the caring for elderly being a great plot topic, and the fact that it's usually the daughters who get to have to undertake that task. Will it be explored? Because they're obviously struggling with it at the moment, aren't they? Both Susan and Tracy are not having much fun with Grandad Bert at all.
It doesn't sound ideal. I mean, we made light of it a couple of weeks ago, but the oil in the ears and the cleaning of the feet and the underpants and stuff.
Yeah, non-appreciation of everything that's happening for him. Sounds a bit of a nightmare, doesn't it?
How do you think we're going to record the podcast in our care home when we're all there together? It's going to be quite, you know, are we going to be able to request a little private room? Is they going to charge us extra for that?
Imagine in those high back chairs all in a row. How lovely. And Witherspoon does predict Alice will have a termination, but will do so without having told Chris, so she'll reveal it to Chris after the event.
It seems unlikely to me, given that she's already told Chris. I mean, that is one hell of a betrayal to tell your husband you're pregnant and then go off and get the abortion. If someone had an abortion behind your back, I'm trying to choose my words carefully, but I think that's appropriate, then I think you might sort of, if you were, you might lean into the, it's the woman's right to guard her own body and she's made this decision and now I'm catching up with the information. If you've been invited into the decision by being told about the fetus, I think you're now given a little bit more license to have some sense of, not ownership, because again, he's such tricky words, some sense of involvement and therefore a right to be involved in the conversation. So yeah. I think it's a whole nother level of betrayal if she did that. I'd be interested to see, you know, how that works out.
I do agree with you fundamentally, but to Royfield, was it Royfield or you, who's just been saying about, you know, if Chris, it was you, Peter, if Chris does start to really put the pile, the pressure on.
Yeah.
That could force her hand to go down that route. Possibly.
It is such a sensitive topic, and I don't want to appear sort of like I'm being too sort of trying to please everyone, but I mean, of everything that I'm saying is based on the current situation, so it sort of evolves so quickly. So, you know, if Chris does start to pile on the pressure, then that immediately changes my opinion about things.
With this being mentioned, how she may well feel trapped, and Gavin was mentioning feeling trapped as well, wasn't he, in Ambridge? He was saying, I can't wait to leave this place because you're scrutinised wherever you go.
Well, he's seen the bright lights and, you know, big city of Cardiff and Swansea. So he's already tasted, you know, sort of been out there in the big world. I did like Witherspoon's sort of suggestion that all of the Aldridge family, the extended Aldridge family, go on a kind of Amish style rumspringer, that they all sort of go off and sort of sow their seeds and then all end up coming back again. So maybe Alice will do that.
Yeah. Do you see Alice and Gavin getting together or
definitely
running away
not.
From Ambridge together?
I don't think so at all. She's her affection for Chris, I mean, has, I feel, been really well acted. In between all the arguing, there have been
some
very careful.
Do you see her affection for Chris? Or you mean her lack of affection for Chris?
No, there's been some quite tender moments in between the bickering where they've been having a joke around, and I think it sort of gave you a sense of a relationship that has some depth and is one that's weathering a storm rather than being, you know, crushed by it.
I don't know about that. For me, they have an incredibly lopsided relationship emotionally. The affection all flows in one direction. Chris is almost like a puppy dog, and she seems like she's just hanging out with a mate. That's the sense that I get from
Royfield. You're seeing this through your own perspective. You're a, you know, a great big burly alpha male. For us piglety beta males, that's very much the very much the norm. You know, please, miss, can I have some more? Or when we, you know, it's so yeah. I mean, I'm sure for you lot, it's fantastic. This kind of striding into a room, your wife's eyes darting up and down your body, drinking every last, you know, in every last inch of your muscly sinewed body. But for us pudding men, you know, yes, it's a totally different experience. Me and Chris.
He's not a pudding, though, is he?
No, but he's sinewy and ripply like Royfield.
Peter. Mm.
The only one mentioned who's pudding-like is me right now. And on that note, I'm going on to Witherspoon talked about was Mary Not Contrary called in last week and the fact that he actually met her in 2015. And here is Mary.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Mary in Toronto. I'm Not Contrary on Twitter, and I'm calling to follow up on my comments from last week. It's actually quite tough for me since I became a mother 4 years ago to either have the time or the mental energy to call in to Dumpty Dum regularly. So it's quite a thrill for me to be able to do this 2 weeks in a row. So my comments last week that generated some interest from Royfield, Kerry and Peter were about more educated women drinking more heavily or more problematically. There's various studies that have been done on this. Biggest one in terms of comparing behaviours across different countries was from the OECD 5 years ago, and I will tweet links out to this. It wasn't the case in all countries, but certainly in the UK, where I was born and bred, and in Canada, where I have lived for the past 11 years, more educated women were more likely to have problematic drinking, twice as likely in the UK, three times as likely in Canada, compared to women in the lowest educational attainment level. As for the reasons behind this, I think that's still an area of ongoing study. Royfield also asked me to talk about my hashtag Tiny Canadian. He's doing well. He just turned 4, and he just started junior kindergarten here in Toronto. Time flies. So look forward to seeing you all on the Twitter sphere and hope everyone else stays safe. Bye.
Oh, Mary, you know, considering you haven't much time or energy to call in and now you've done it 2 weeks in a row because we were desperate to hear a bit more about the more educated women drinking, thank you so much for coming back to us. And I really look forward to reading the links that you post on Twitter. So, yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah, Kerry, how do you feel about energy levels and being involved in Dumpty Dum on a regular basis?
Is it something that you struggle with?
Yeah. Well, you got me and Royfield. That's, you know, as good as, yeah.
Well, I love it. It's fine.
Oh, okay,
it's a ray of light in life at the moment.
I feel the same way. But Mary seems to as well, given that she's back on the horse. Oh, bad choice of words, Peter. You know, but yes, involved again. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Stunning. Right. We're keeping it on the other side of the pond at the moment. We've had Witherspoon over there in New York. We've had Mary Not Contrary in Toronto, which used to be called York. There you go. There's a link.
Did it? Oh.
Yeah. Oh, originally it was called York. Yeah. And now we have Cranky Yankees just south of Toronto. She's in Vermont.
Hello. This is the Cranky Yankee. I'm so happy to hear that Royfield, Auntie Carrie, and Peter and Witherspoon are all in good form whenever they get to the podcast. I don't sound cranky because I'm too upset to be cranky and too anxiety-ridden to put it into my voice. That would take too much energy. It's just challenging to have a society which you grew up in thinking things were one way be completely thrown askew by a Nazi Cheeto at the helm and seeing democracy crumble. Anyway, I digress. That's the real world. I want to go into my parasocial world. First of all, there are still Jamaicans working in the apple orchards of New England to this very day, period. I have to be quick, and I'm not a quick talker, but I think Chris is visiting the pyramids in Egypt, and then he's going to visit the river Denial.
Oh, Cranky Yankee, thank you. The Nazi Cheeto.
Yeah,
times are grim with him around, aren't they?
I totally missed what she said about the apple orchards. Can you guys
Jamaicans.
Help me out?
Because remember last week, we talked about
his grandfather.
Yeah, about farms in America, and I ended up by saying that my grandpops worked in Connecticut, and there's a community of Jamaicans still in Connecticut to this day. Though I thought it was all historic, I didn't realize that it was still a thing where Jamaicans worked in New England on the farms.
It's one of the most fun things about traveling around America is you do find these tiny little kind of communities where they still have sort of, they still speak the languages. So, you know, I guess it would be Patois for the Jamaicans in Vermont. And it was Vermont, wasn't it? And so there's in on the West Coast, there's little pockets of Welsh speakers as well up in the hills of the of the Sierra Nevada. Yeah. So, but all over the country.
Good heavens. Though, Cranky Yankee, I think you'll know from being a seasoned listener of Dumpty Dum that we don't condone politics on this show. We play that with a very straight bat. However, yes, he is an utterly odious man. He is a stain on American society. And let's just hope that the buffoon gets everything he deserves on November the 3rd. And then post that, that it ends up with court and jail. Anyway, as I said, we don't do politics on Dumpty Dum. And here is Jackie.
Hello, my name's Jackie and I'm a first-time caller in Ira. I am a Ben Archer, so I started listening in 2002. I'm calling in because I have a plot prediction and I think that Alice is going to have an affair with Gavin. They're getting way too friendly. She's told him too many secrets. He knows too much about her. And the fact that Chris is so excited about the baby, I think is going to push her away and into Gavin's arms. I think Gavin will go with her to have her termination. And I think they'll have a secret affair. Okay, thanks a lot. Bye.
Yes, Jackie, I agree. And you're a first-time caller in her, so thank you for ringing us. Ben Archer is your vintage from 2002. I totally agree with you. I think that's what's going to happen. Chris's pressure will push her towards going with Gavin. I think they may well leave Ambridge together as well.
I have to accept that at a certain point, enough people think it, so I've got to consider I might be wrong. And yeah. I don't want it to happen, I think. The sound of Gavin and Alice making sweet noises, it would be too much. Like, I don't think I can stomach it.
I did think that the Gavin actor is really, really good this week. I made little notes about the fact that especially when he was, when they had the crossed wires conversation and he was thrown into suddenly having to talk about the fact that he was a gambler, which he isn't. I really thought he was strong.
Good actor in two levels. One, he made the silkiest of silk purses out of the sowiest of sow's ears, trying to sort of make that French farcical nonsense into something coherent. But anyway, was very good.
And I think that might be a reason. Oh, if he leaves Ambridge, he won't stay around, though, will he? But anyway, I'm quite liking him at the moment as a actor.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It's Gavin the force for good. I mean, is it kind of, is there room for redemption? Is there the opportunity for us to forgive his involvement in slavery to sort of, allow him to sort of remain as a member of the cast? If everyone else is wrong and they don't have an affair, if he turns his back on slavery and also on his dad and maybe even helps, stitch his dad up, could we then find room for him in our hearts?
Yes.
Yeah, because it's the Archers, and of course we can. We've forgiven worse, and insert immediately Shula, Pat. Yeah.
I wouldn't forgive him. I wouldn't. I think it's brilliant that they've introduced Gavin into the Archers, and he has gone on, and it's a dreadful cliche thing to say, but he's gone on a journey. When he arrived, he was incredibly odious and loathsome, and he was entitled, wasn't he? I want this 30 grand. Come on, Dad, give me this money for my wedding.
Yep.
Now, here we are 9 months later, and we go, you know, he's not so bad, you know.
Only if he blows the whole thing up, though, and you know, dobs his dad in. And
But I think, though, that this is ultimately the genius of the Archers, is that for the most part, baddies, with the exception of Rob Titchener, baddies always have redeeming features. You know, this isn't Star Wars with Darth Vader. And Peter, you said it, and we know it, that Philip Moss actually genuinely loves Kirsty and does romantic gestures. And it's there not only just to throw us off the scent, but also to show us that he's a well-rounded character. He's not a well-rounded human being, because doesn't matter how many fairy lights you lay in a grotto for Christmas or whatever the heck he did for Kirsty, human slavery is abhorrent and you can't forgive it. And
but Roy, I'm not so sure about him actually having true affection for Kirsty, though, either now. I think he may well have. We were chatting about this, weren't we, Peter, about, you know, him having, he values her.
Yes, you were very keen on that word.
I would only be able to go that far. And I think he values her because she's ultimately like a cover for all the horrible things that he's doing.
But we've had, I forget how long Philip's been in the Archers now. Let's say, for the argument's sake, it's 2 years. It could even be longer. When he first came in, he did practically nothing. And there was, you know, when we were saying, what was the point of Philip Moss? So he's been in it for 2 to 3 years. And when he got with Kirsty, he was always incredibly thoughtful towards her and affectionate. You know, and there's got to be a reason why they kept on laying that on all the time. It's incredibly thoughtful. I think they oversold
it. We didn't know then what we know now.
No, sure.
About what he's been doing.
But that's the whole point, though. I'm saying that he, as a character, you know, you can. It's like Hitler was Hitler, but he was still quite nice to his dog, type of thing, you know. And he was a halfway decent watercolor painter. He didn't just get, you know, he doesn't get out of bed every morning and just kick hell out of the cat, scream at the neighbors. He's a well-rounded character, not a well-rounded human being, but
if character. Hitler was screaming at the cat, you'd definitely know about it, wouldn't you?
I know what you're saying, Royfield, but I still think that someone who's capable of doing what he's doing isn't necessarily loving Kirsty. He might think he is, but I don't think he is.
I don't know. I think this could be I'm just probably mislabeling. I don't know whether it's a sociopath or a psychopath, but it is one of those paths. But really, we were talking about Gavin. And all I'm saying about Gavin is Gavin is an adult. You know, he's not 15. He's not, you know, 18, where you can argue that even though he knows that what he's involved in is wrong, he's still enthralled to his parent. So he has to go along with it. Slavery is slavery.
He's a bully, though, really, essentially.
But also, Gavin is an adult. And we're yet to discern any reason why Philip is unquestioning with his father's business practices. So maybe there is some incredibly powerful reason. But right here and now, I don't really care how lovely and how supportive of Alice that he has been. He's a modern slave.
There is an extra level to it that they have hinted at. I'm not trying to out myself as a fan of slavery, and I'm not on the fence about it. You know, slavery is bad, but he has spent these months in the lockup with the whatever it was, you know, in the bedsit with the slaves. And I think they've been humanized to him. He's been, you know, Philip has told him off a few times for getting too close to them. And we're in a sort of a privileged position to have all the information that the people in Ambridge don't have. So, you know, even if we're not saying that we're going to forgive Gavin for it, I guess another way of looking at it is, can we find it credible that he stays in the village and is able to rehabilitate himself and to create a second chapter in his life where he tries to put this behind him or is dealing with the guilt?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly wasn't saying that I would forgive him, but I was saying that I can see him hanging around still as a character.
Yeah, and it is a show. Like, I mean, could I forgive someone in real life for it? Probably not. Can I put it to the back of my mind so I can enjoy The Archers? Absolutely. It's two different things, right?
I don't know. And that's a polite way of me saying I thoroughly disagree with the pair of you. When it all comes out, and as sure as eggs, it will do, that Philip Moss is a modern slaver, right?
Mm.
There is no way that in a village of, what, 2,000 people, that his son, let's say his son doesn't take the rap for it, that somehow he gets off with it. But there is no way that the son of a modern slaver, that you can stay in a village of 2,000 people. You've got to hightail it out of town, out of the village. You have to.
If he has gone to Harrison and said, I've had a Damascene conversion, I now see the error of my ways, this is what I've been up to, and he then enables Harrison to capture Philip, and it's his... And
but he how gives long has he been complicit in the modern slavery?
I'm not defending Gavin's actions. I'm just talking about ways that he could be his development, because he has, to your point, Royfield, he started off as this kind of childish idiot who's just bumbling around in a self-serving way, and he's garage, and now he's Alice's support system at a time when she's really struggling, and also is showing some sensitivity towards Blake and Kenzie. So they've obviously moved him in that direction intentionally. Mm. So if that continues. I'm not a fan of Gavin's. I'm just saying that, you know, it's plausible that they could keep on evolving him.
And he said, be careful of secrets and cover ups. Secrets can turn out all wrong. You know, he's saying, like you've just explained, that he has moved so far away from how he was, I don't know, a month or two ago.
Yeah.
And I do think when Philip got a message, didn't he, about the new build that they're going to get involved in at Hollerton, I reckon it's all when they're working there is when it will become apparent that the people who are working for them, there's something wrong with the setup.
Just from a plot point of view, it is better if you have Philip as the out and out baddie and you have Gavin caught between two horses. If you have Gavin caught between two stools, it's not even the right thing to get my phrase right. if he's caught between two stools, his newfound affection for Alice, assuming that everyone else is right, his loyalty to his father, you know, it'll add some grey areas to an otherwise binary situation. And it doesn't mean we have to be fans of Gavin. We don't have to say, oh, we love him, we forgive him for everything he's done. But it will add some sort of some shadows to an otherwise rather bleak situation, you know, otherwise rather stark situation.
Because at this point as well, Philip, he's still describing, you know, was it Blake as faulty?
Yeah.
And has no redeeming features at all or hints at feeling that remorse or anything like that, Gavin actually does.
I've said it before, and obviously there's no two ways about it. The whole thing is revolting, and you do feel revolted, especially when you hear him sort of blithely leaving phone messages to a friend saying, oh, this one's a bit beaten up, but he can still put a lick of paint on the wall, or words to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it would have helped to have heard from Kenzie and Blake a bit more to give you that extra level of contempt for Philip and Gavin to really show you these.
Peter, right? I couldn't disagree with you more. This is modern slavery. I don't care. We don't need. In a way, I think it's poetic that we hear literally nothing from them. They don't need to be represented and for us to have any more of an emotional connection to them. This man was on the phone about selling another human being. That's it, as far as I'm concerned, right?
Yeah, but no disagreement, Royfield. I completely agree. I just all I'm saying is it would. There would be an extra level of connect. You'd feel more.
We don't need to.
You don't think so?
It's modern slavery. No, it's modern slavery. Right. These people are being forced to work without any pay. And somehow Philip Moss justifies this by saying, we feed them and give them a roof over their heads. And they had a dodgy start in life. This man's beyond contempt. We don't need to hear Kenzie and Blake. We don't need, because we heard that telephone call and he was trying to sell
somebody who actually isn't fit for work. He's not recovered from his injuries. Yes, Gavin is trying to speak to his father and say, look, we did a whole load of tests at the hospital. He's not swinging the lead, Dad. He still is, you know, not really well.
And they told him off for faking it in the hospital. I agree. Yeah, I agree with
we
you.
We don't need to hear from them to know that Philip is evil and modern slavery is evil or anything. But here, you know, we could still hear their side of the experience.
There's a reason why people... We don't need Nigel Farage bobbing around in the ocean pointing his crappy little camera at people in dinghies in order to understand the plight of those people seeking refugee status. No, so, you know, to your point, you should be able to have the humanity to project your own knowledge onto the situation. You shouldn't need to see those pictures to feel anything. But equally, when it comes to the sort of abstract concept of people seeking legal status and you just see a bunch of numbers on a page, somehow we can all go to the polling booth and vote for some rather unpleasant policies. And to that point, I, you know, yes, I have nothing but compassion, sort of like, you know, kind thoughts towards Blake and Kenzie, but I would like to hear their story. I would like to feel for them on a personal level rather than an abstract level.
Well, I think before this whole storyline is completely written and then put to bed, we are going to hear about how Philip Moss came to own Blake and Kenzie.
And you then, think so? Yeah.
Yeah, you have to. You have to, right? However, anyway, let's move on.
One last thing, Royfield. I mean, you sounded emotional. I feel quite emotional about it, and that's the point, isn't it? It is something that really matters, and we should, you know, acknowledge that. There's a lot of feeling.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know, state the bleeding obvious, but like for me, it has a high resonance, this storyline, because that's who I am as a person. It's who my forefathers were.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, yes,
but. And also, I have to applaud the Beeb and the writers of The Archers, because when this storyline became apparent that it was actually modern slavery, and I was banging on saying that there's something to do with money and business dealings to do with Philip Moss, yeah. And I was in the ballpark, but I didn't know that it was modern day slavery. I was not aware what an issue this was. I had no idea. And I like to see myself as someone who's somewhat decently well-informed about things that are going on in society and in the world. I did not know that this was a problem in the United Kingdom. So we have to applaud the writers of The Archers for bringing this storyline in and doing it in a way which is true to the hideous, odious practice, even down to the nomenclature of using horses. So they've done their research and it's shocking. And I just think, I don't care who your dad is. Ultimately, if you're an adult, you know right from wrong. As much of a bully as Philip Moss obviously is, Gavin has a sense of entitlement too. Just because the Gavin Moss that we learnt about in January has been fleshed out to the Gavin Moss that we have in September... Right. Remember, he had that real sense of entitlement. I know you've got money, Dad. I know that I want this 30 grand for my wedding. I'm going to go off to Bali. And off the back of that 30 grand is the sweat and the tears and the degradation of other human beings. I've got no time for it. I don't care what he says or does. As a character, he's bad and he cannot be redeemed. Anyway, moving swiftly on, right? Auntie Gary Warburton.
Is it that time?
Yes. Do we have any he-mails with an H?
We have a he-mail, yes. And it is from Frankie. So Frankie says, Dear Royfield, Kerry, Pete and the Dumpty-Dum global family, I'm a first-time emailer innerer, so here's my housekeeping. I'm Frankie, writing from the wild north corner of England, Northumberland. My Archer's vintage is early 90s. I reckon I'm a Daniel Hebden. Professionally, I'm a potter. I'm a long-term Dumpty Dum lurker listener. I've been listening since about episode 10. And ooh. Dumpty Dum kept me going when I had to briefly stop listening to the actual Archers during the terminally ludicrous Hadley Huff plotline. I realise this isn't very topical in terms of current storylines, but I was prompted to write by the discussion on the importance of increasing diversity in the Archers. And then in brackets, it says, I know this discussion was weeks ago. That's how long it takes me. Well, it's my theory that the scriptwriters have already introduced a black character, Lee. In Lee, we have a character that could be permanently and forever in the heart of the Bridge Farm family. And while I'm no Helen fan, surely it's time she was allowed a lasting functional relationship. To bring a black character into the cast, root them directly into one of the main Archer families and make them a regular cast member would be a proper commitment. As has been discussed on Dumpty Dum, country villages, rural jobs and activities are predominantly occupied by white people. But Lee has been brought to the village in a way unrelated to farming or rural pursuits, and he has a job which is not related to the countryside. So it's all been set up in a way that's realistic. The Lee and Helen storyline is on hold while they're separated by the pandemic. But I really hope once this couple can meet in person again, we'll see it blossom. I'd be interested to see if anyone agrees that this is a plausible theory. And if the scriptwriters hadn't written Lee as a black character before, can they please do so now? Because really, what's stopping them? Thank you for the great podcast and wishing rainbows and unicorns to all. Frankie.
Well, this is a bit awkward for me, Kerry, because I've just been outed as massively pro-slavery, so perhaps I shouldn't be the person to opine on whether Lee's black or not. And also, if he is black, it causes me trouble because I said how much I disliked him before, so it's like, oh. And I also attack Royfield on a weekly basis, so my credentials as a friend of black folk is... But Royfield, you know, as the resident black person, what do you reckon?
I feel I have room and space to talk on this topic.
Yes.
If he's black, yeah, great, whatevs, right? But as we've said on many of occasion, it should be tacitly or implicitly detailed. So, and it doesn't have to be that a character says, oh, is that black chap, the judo instructor, right? Mm-hmm. That'd be somewhat of a blunt way of saying it, though actually be very accurate. But it'd be a case of, oh, so tell us about your family. Where was your mom from? Oh, my mom's from Grenada. Oh, Grenada, where's that? In the Caribbean. And then you just move on,
yeah,
type of thing. So there's ways in which it can be subtly done. However, as I've said before, there is, if he is black, and it hasn't been mentioned at all, or even just Susan saying, you know, oh, we had that black chap in the other day. Oh, he bought some hobnobs, right? Yeah, that's real life. That is real life. But anyway, so...
Could you see Lee being the black character?
Well, yes, because if you're going to go down the road of soft stereotypes, he's into physical fitness, he does martial arts, disproportionately... People that do martial arts and kind of that type of training do tend to be black and male, slightly disproportionately. And then he does physiotherapy in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Again, he works with the NHS, so the chances of him being of an ethnic minority are higher, and specifically within that role. Statistically speaking, he could be, you know.
Mm. I mean, Kerry and I were talking... off air just before we were recording about positive stereotypes and some, you know, the damage they potentially do, and we were sort of maybe hoping that, you know, if he was a black character, that, you know, Pat or Tony could sort of clumsily sort of air some of those positive stereotypes, and it might be a useful way to address some of those in a kind of public service kind of way.
Couldn't agree more. Oh, right. I don't know, right, but I do feel that my blood's pumping. So it's probably right and proper that we have a little bit of a break, come back the other side, and it's going to be Sandra Jenkinson and a social media roundup.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Hello, here is Sandra Jenkinson with the social media roundup for the week beginning Monday, the 21st of September. It seemed to me that the storylines this week about Alice's alcoholism and pregnancy and the modern slavery storyline are going along in parallel and possibly converging. Alice's pregnancy was the hot topic this week. Kate Lyle presented a plot prediction which she didn't want to happen but was pretty sure would. Here it is. Alice has another quick chat with Gavin, or possibly another unlikely person. She is cured of her alcoholism. She realises that the highest possible fulfilment for a woman is being a mother and settles down into a life of domestic bliss. I don't think so, do you? The question about fetal alcohol syndrome has arisen again. This was speculated about in previous discussions about Alice's problem with alcohol. Members are also concerned about her relationship with Chris. If she did choose to have an abortion and didn't tell him, what would his reaction be if he found out later on? Especially if he found out that Gavin knew about it all along. There have been questions about the relationship between Gavin and Alice. Some thought that Alice confiding in him was unbelievable. I'm not so sure. Michelle Laverick in Academic Archers thought it positive that Alice could open up to Gavin. Stephen James Robbins found it strange that Alice had suddenly stopped drinking. However, others have pointed out that Chris asked if she wanted more wine at dinner one night. And of course, the other big topic this week was the continuation of the modern slavery storyline. Pat Ralph Hanavan referred to the cross-purpose conversation and said it was ridiculous, unlikely, and went on forever. However, Laura Jackson disagreed, as we knew that Kirsty had got it wrong. She thought that the three-way conversation between Kirsty, Philip and Gavin highlighted that Gavin is his father's pawn. Charlotte Yarker said that she enjoyed it and could understand how the confusion happened. I think a lot of us wouldn't have known the parlance of modern slavery if we hadn't heard this storyline. Martin Skinner from Academic Archers said, that for all Gavin showing us the human and cuddly side of modern slavery, and what a wonderful listener he is, and what a good counsellor he would make, I can't help remembering the menacing way in which he spoke to Blake when Blake was in hospital. Gavin must have been stressed at the time. I'm sure that wasn't the real Gavin. Listeners are divided about the change to Gavin's personality. There is little sympathy for his change of heart in some of the discussions across the groups. However, others recognise that he has been manipulated by his father, and he does seem to have begun to grow a conscience. By the way, Simon George requested new underpants for Mr. Moss after that conversation with Kirsty. Caroline Wright added a useful link to the group, which supplied an insight to horse trading, something obviously most of us know nothing about. Another storyline was the Snells bickering over plans for their garden, and that actually didn't seem to go down too well. However, it was noted that Linda is getting back to being her old self. As an aside, Melly McMerriweather asked a question in the Dumpty Dum group on Friday. If you had to choose which episode would be reinstated first, would you go for Friday or Sunday? It wasn't presented as a poll, but scrolling through, the majority do seem to have opted for Friday. And to end on a slight tangent, if you haven't listened to Claire Balding's ramblings this week, I would recommend catching up with it on Sounds. She went walking across Dartmoor with Barry Verimond, who plays Ed Grundy. It was heartwarming to hear of his other interests. Bye for now.
Thank you for that, Sandra, as always. Tip top. It was most excellent. And look forward to another missive from you in approximately 5 weeks' time, my dear. Peter.
Yeah?
I know you've already tweeted these out, but can you give us, for those of us that are not on Twitter or haven't looked at Twitter, your tweets of the week, sir?
Now my brain hurts because I'm trying to work out the kind of timeline of it all. Yes, I send them out as a bit of a kind of trailer for the fact that the podcast is on its way. So you can steal a march and find them from my Twitter feed. But anyway, so I've got to get into, after last week's triumph of tweets of the week, I've got to get into the right zone. So energy wise, boom, here we are. So gold, silver, bronze, in, you know, traditional order, starting with bronze. So this is difficult to say. Zanderl, at Hinge_Zanderl, XANDERL, and he said, mm-hmm. Gavin's quite a nice guy apart from the whole modern slavery thing, which I think we've covered quite thoroughly a few minutes ago. And Royfield, I'm sorry if you're upset. I wasn't trying to upset you, but yeah. Anyway, so that was that one. And that was bronze, so well done, Zandel. And then the next one is Matthew, and that's at Mr. Weir, spelt, I think, the Scottish way, W-E-I-R. And caution, Linda, I subverted symmetry once. Halfway through the orb set at Glastonbury 92, ended up in the greenfield at 5 a.m. talking to a tree.
Hey.
We haven't touched on the subversion.
Yes, which is good, because I think I'd be dealing with two hot-blooded people. You'd be absolutely steaming, Kerry.
I would.
And then in at number one, Royfield's exciting bed of music, gold. And this comes in two stages, and it's from regular contributor Ambridge Pony Club, at Jen_J Stephen with a PH. And so she's writing in response to Goldie Levels, at Goldie Levels. So Goldie Levels said, looking at the teasers on the Archers website for week commencing 12th of October, there is no cast list. Is this just an oversight, or is there somebody in there they don't want to reveal yet? And Jen has said, exciting, Rob pops up as a buyer for Blake.
That's so, quite good.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
that is most excellent. Goodness. It's the time which people call it admin. I know that Andrew Horn, long of this parish, and somebody's come to many a Dumpty Dum meetup and many a Dumpty Dum live event, says that this is the bit where he generally skips, or at least fast forwards, which is unfortunate for me, because it's when I do my best work on this podcast. I generally just say hello. And then over to you, Peter and Kerry. And then I just have a little bit of a
mini rant about Facebook and the corrosive effect it has on our civil society and democracy. So, Andrew, you're missing all of that, mate, in the admin bit. But dumdydum.com, go there. It's car shop. It's got some other awesome things you can do besides. If you want to rail against anything that I've said, Peter said, you won't want to rail against anything that Kerry said, because Kerry's always well balanced and measured. But there's probably something that Peter said, and you think, oh, bloody Nora. Or that I've said, and you go, he's banging on about that again. Why don't you go into the comment section of dumdydum.com and under the said correct episode, go and vent your spleen. Or what you can do is hit the contact us button, and by the magic of the interwebs, it will send a message to us if you write a message first. So write a message and say, Brown, shut up, man. And here's the reason why you need to shut up. Cease and desist, right? Then hit the contact us button. And by the magic of fiber optic cables and binary technology, it'll come into my inbox. I'll read it, forward it on to Kerry. Kerry will then read it out and you'll be on the podcast. That's what you can do on dumdydum.com. Awesome things like that. Another thing you can do, and I keep saying this every week, is that we're going to thank everybody that's a Patreon. And just bear with me, I'm about to go and see my kids in Canada. So I ran out of time today. I did actually start the list. But we are going to thank you in approximately 2 weeks' time, everybody that donates to the podcast. Now, if you want to get your name read out on this podcast, why don't you become a Patreon so you can get your name read out? It's quite simple. All you have to do is donate $2 per episode to be a Patreon. Get your name read out. You feel all fluffy and warm on the inside. You'll be like, yeah, I love that podcast. I support that podcast. Yeah, I really like Kerry and Peter. Royfield's not too bad either. And I've got their backs. So that's one way you can support this podcast, by going on to patreon.com. Now, write us a review. Reviews are good. They're one of the fuels of the internet. You know, you never bought anything from Amazon.com without reading the user reviews on it first. Have you, Kerry?
I have not, no.
There you go. And why would anybody go on to a new podcast they've never listened to without a user listener review? So why don't you go and contribute to this, the very currency of the internet, by writing a review about Dumdydum. Now, I'm always honest about this. If you think it's a bag of horse manure, what we do, say that. However, if you think room for improvement, say that too. But if you think we're wonderful, can't get any better with the highlight of your week, why don't you say that as well? Go and write a review on Apple iTunes or a podcatcher of your choice.
And to be fair to Andrew Horn, he's probably heard your admin about 300 times. So I don't blame him for wishing to. And that's because he's been listening for so very long, hasn't he?
He has.
Yes. Bless him. So remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website or call 0203 031 3105 to leave a message, or send a text message starting with dumb to 077 862 00690.
Twitter. It's set up for people like me who fundamentally can't write, but I still make a horse's arse of it. But it's fundamentally the place where dumdydummers meet online. And it's what birthed the whole thing that has become this six-year love affair between us, the listeners of The Archers. We got together through Twitter. On Twitter, you can find us at dumdydum. Auntie Kerry Warburton, where can people find you on Twitter?
Not at Kerry Warburton, but at Kerry Warbis, which is KerriWarbis.
I really think that maybe when we do Twitter, I shouldn't call you Auntie Kerry Warburton, should I?
I don't care what you call
do
me.
Do we need Royfield, to? Can you? We need to maybe create a forwarding account from Kerry Warburton on Twitter, just to, you know, for anyone who accidentally finds you there.
Because there was some confusion some weeks back, wasn't there? But anyway, Fickling. Peter Fickling.
I am me Pete old mucker.
I haven't queued you up properly yet.
Sorry,
me
sorry,
old
sorry.
Mucker, me old China, you West Ham supporter, you father to Cyrus, husband of Charlotte. Where can people find you on Twitter?
Well, they can find me more easily physically now that you've given away half my personal details. does anyone want my postcode as well? My height, my eye colour? Yeah, I mean, good Lord, if this is your way of getting revenge for me, you know, having my controversial Gavin Moss. I would just like to remind everyone, it is a radio show, not real life. I'm not actually a fan of Gavin as a real person. Anyway, I'm feeling quite guilty now. But yes, by the way, I've just, as a side note, while I was waiting to do my little bit on Twitter, I've looked up Kerry Warburton on Twitter and seems to be a lovely middle-aged lady in Adelaide, Australia. So, you know, maybe give her a follow if you fancy it.
But is she an auntie, though? That's the question. Is she an auntie?
I'm going to say confidently yes. Mm. She looks like she comes from a family that probably has a lot of kids.
Mm. With the same first name spelling as me.
She's more R's than you, Kerry.
Yeah, you see.
Okay. Yes. Oh, no, there's a Kerry Montague. I'll stop.
Oh, and I can be found at Royfield. Quite simply, ROI for India, then Field. There you go. Now, Facebook. I think you all know what I feel about Facebook, but it's a necessary evil, folks. It's necessary if you're in business. And I understand if you're separated from your loved ones, and most of us are, you know, we're separated from our immediate family because of the COVIDs. You can be separated from your extended family because of distance work or even the COVIDs. So you need it. It's the connective tissue which allows you to see when little Jack is taking his first steps, you know, because your son, your daughter, your nephew, your niece has posted those images on Facebook. It's a wonderful platform for things like that, he says, just talking off the top of his head and not having anything written down. However, folks, just beware. You know, you've got that uncle, you know, who writes those conspiratorial messages. Put him right, put him straight. Whenever somebody posts something about Donald Trump and says he's misunderstood, put them straight. Don't allow extreme right-wing hate masquerading as opinion to fester. We've got to reclaim the center ground. We've got to reclaim the commons. And if Facebook won't do it centrally, we need to do it as good global citizens. One of the lovely things you can do on Facebook is go on to Dumpty Dum. Type in Dumpty Dum. You'll see no tweets. Pro hate and misogyny and anything which is remotely racist. It's an oasis of loveliness. So go on to Facebook and just type in Dumpty Dum and just bathe in the sunshine of niceness. But remember, whenever the niceness rears its ugly head, don't ignore it. Stamp the fucking thing out. Right, smashing. That's me done. Right, YouPair. I feel that YouPair really did drive the show until the racism bit. Then I woke up. So I'm going to leave it to YouPair to sign off. You'll hear no more from me, dear listener. I'll see you next week. I'll be recording from Canada. And yes, so goodbye, listener.
Well, speaking of Amazon reviews, it reminded me of the Amazon review that I found in the week about The Moon's a Balloon, which is a memoir by David Niven. And the Amazon review said, all about me, me, me. Had a cushy time in the army. Hope the next book is more interesting, not more me, me, me. About an autobiography. So it just made me think of that, really.
And that's our book club. That's our Dumpty Dum book club at the moment.
It is
Kerry and I have both bought copies of the Moon is a Balloon. So we will be reading that. I tried to give Royfield a sales pitch, but he was proving difficult to seduce.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's just you and me.
Oh, well, never mind. and yeah, I'm off to some kind of psychiatric correctional unit to have my attitudes towards slavery and being pro or against it, you know, thoroughly adjusted.
And so we'll see a different Peter next week.
Well, hopefully. Otherwise, I worry about Royfield's, you know. Well, at least we know Royfield's heart's working. It didn't explode. So, you know, so we didn't hear sort of, you know, bits of ventricles splattering against the microphone. So that was good news anyway. Yeah. And on that lovely note.
It's farewell.
Hello, my name is Carolyn Wright. I contacted you last week. As well as being a fan of the Archers, I also write poems and other short pieces based on the programme. So this is a short poem I wrote about Frida's handbag. It must have been mentioned in one of the programmes. Okay. Frida's handbag, written by Bert Fry. I love my dear Frida. She meant the world to me. But we had our problems now and again. Well, one, two or three. She used to leave her handbag in the most awkward of places, in the fridge up the chimney, inside the suitcases. I'd be writing my poems and get up for a drink. Then I'd find her handbag floating in the sink. She left it once inside the tumble dryer. I rescued it just before it caught fire. While digging up the veg patch one summer's morn, I came across her handbag, looking so forlorn. She'd left it on a garden cane, dangling for all to see. I took it down and placed it under our favourite tree. She was so pleased to find it, so grateful to get it back. She took me by the hand and down to a warm haystack. Well, I hope you like that.
Well done, you pet. I hit stop.